Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
From KQED.
Welcome to the world-famous Asia SF, the home of the ladies of Asia SF. Our transgender stars who will serve and entertain you.
Neon lights flashing, music pumping, a lot of spangles and leopard print, and thigh-high leather boots. This is Asia SF, a beloved restaurant and club that has showcased transgender performers for more than a quarter century. And this week, to the dismay of many in the LGBTQIA+ community, it closed its doors. I'm Sasha Coca, and today on the California Report magazine, we're going to start our show with a visit to one of the last performances at this iconic San Francisco institution.
If you all came to see the gorgeous ladies of Asia SF, I need you all to make some noise!
Reporter Wilma Consul attended one of those final shows and tells us about the history of Asia SF and how it became a place where people from all over the world could find joy and authenticity and watch a fabulous performance.
The women who perform here use first names. Blair is tonight's MC. She looks elegant, poised, like a model about to strut on the runway.
Learning how to perform has definitely more so been learning how to embrace myself on the stage.
Blair began her transition as a teen. When she was 24, despite not having performed before, she got a job at Asia SF. Now in her 30s, Blair beams confidence on the mic, ready to engage the crowd.
Together. So that being said, let's say happy birthday to Farrah and Rose.
Many come to Asia SF for birthdays, bridal showers, even divorces. It's not hard to have fun here with ongoing dance music and tropical drinks named after performers like Blair's Temptation and Violet's Ube Colada. During its prime, Asia SF was open 7 days a week, packed every night. While drag was already popular in big cities in the 90s, Asia SF, with mostly Asian performers, became a novelty and a must-see event, even if it wasn't cheap. Today, the popularity of the TV show RuPaul's Drag Race has exposed millions to gay and trans cultures. And now, there are other entertainment options for drag fans like the DragCon, Comic-Con but for RuPaul's queens and their fans. And drag brunches are now a thing. But the pandemic hit Asia SF hard. It struggled bringing people back in. Larry Hashbarger, Asia SF's co-founder, says since their closing became public, their farewell shows have been in demand. It's as if it was 1998 again.
We're completely sold out. We've been adding extra nights of the week, extra seatings. Everybody is so sad that we're not going to be around, and they want to come and experience the magic for one last time.
Hashbarger's travels to Thailand inspired Asia SF. In April 1998, he opened this business with Skip Young, a marketing executive. With the famed choreographer, Ronnie Reddick, to polish the show, the two had a hit on their hands. Now both past their retirement years, the owners feel it's time to close shop. This Sunday night, the place is full. Before the show starts, guests are led downstairs to the waiting area. Really a club with a DJ and a bar. Ali Delahanty ventured from Walnut Creek.
I know nothing about the show, and I kind of chose to not do any research into it to kind of be surprised. All I've heard is that it's really good, so I'm excited.
Right before the performances, the guests are escorted upstairs. In the audience are a good representation of a San Francisco crowd. Diverse, young, moms, aunties, and maybe gunkles. That's gay uncles. Andrew De Los Santos, a social media influencer, sits at a table with friends.
I actually just moved across the street, and I've been dying to come here. But now they're closing, so now I'm really sad. But I wanted to come and, you know, check it out before they're gone.
Shame on you, honey.
I know.
Wait,
What do you have there?
Ube. The Filipinos can't resist good ube.
The California Asian fusion menu at Asia SF is not your typical bar food. Chef Raul Hernandez, who started here as a dishwasher 25 years ago, heads the tiny kitchen, booming behind the DJ booth.
This is orange lamb sauce. They over there, they're gonna make the filet mignon, they're gonna make the salmon. So now you're gonna see, we're gonna run right now maybe 200 plates.
With food and drinks on the tables, the show begins. Each performer walks up in her very high heels, assisted by a bartender or a server, to the bar. Yes, the bar counter that is now the stage that takes all of the club's center space. The ladies of Asia SF, all glammed up, sashay, prance and dance around, their audiences glued to their moves, some mesmerized. Gia looks fierce in black boots and black sequin jumpsuit fitted to her body. She does splits and high kicks, a testament to her 25 years of dance training.
Asia SF actually means a whole lot to me. Realistically, as a black trans woman in America, I don't really get very many opportunities as a showgirl to get placement as far as creating a career behind it. This is a safe space not just for me, but for many girls that actually want to pursue show business.
Ladies and gentlemen, the dreams.
It was a dream for many transgender women to perform at Asia SF. At one point, there was an Asia SF in Palm Springs. When it closed in 2022, Gia, who was a model and a reality show star, moved to Asia SF in the Bay Area. She says she and her fellow performers are vessels, not just to entertain, but to educate the general public about the transgender community.
Most people think that we are sex objects. So typically when some people come here, they think that they're coming to a meat market. But this is not a hookup location, it's not a hookup spot. That's the biggest misconception, is that we are over-sexualized and we're not allowed to present ourselves as people.
At this club, the performers also serve drinks and food so they can talk to the guests, their supporters. It makes the experience more personal.
So my name is Carmina. I started working here September of 2000.
Before Asia SF, Carmina worked at Trader Joe's for 12 years and volunteered for an Asian American HIV/AIDS organization back in the 90s.
We have this group called the Rise Girls. Like, I'm Carmina, Rise Aroni, your San Francisco treat. So when I started working here, that was the time when I started my transition. It never crossed my mind that I would be able to, like, live my authentic life.
Authenticity, living one's truth, is the gospel of Asia SF. For performers like Carmina, Asia SF has given her more than a sense of pride.
I went to high school in the Philippines and we celebrated our 30th reunion here. Oh my God, I'm giving away my age, but like a lot of them are nurses. Surprise, surprise. They all came here from all over the world, but like I'm still kind of proud, like although I did not graduate college or whatever. I do not have the professional careers that they do, but like I love my job, you know?
The staff at Asia SF tell me that working here is like being with family. This past April marked Asia SF's 26th anniversary. And even though its doors are now closed, Asia SF will be remembered as a haven for transgender women to be free and to own who they are.
Reporter Wilma Consul. The club's organizers say they're going to figure out how to do some pop-up evenings to keep the spirit and history of Asia SF alive. By the way, Wilma was one of my first mentors at NPR when I was an intern there more than 20 years ago. Okay, I bet you can name the animal on California's state flag and probably the name of our state flower. But did you know that at the start of this year, we got an official state mushroom? Thanks to a new law signed by Governor Newsom. KQED science reporter Danielle Venton went in search of the California golden chanterelle. And we'll let her tell you how it went.
When I learned California had a new state mushroom, I thought it would be easy to find some. But most foragers I spoke with weren't available or didn't want to reveal their spot. Someone sent this to me in an email.
Here's the deal about showing people chanterelle patches. They come back underneath that very same tree, and they are a prized and commercially valuable edible. And if you show someone your secret patch, then it is no longer a secret.
Which is fair enough, right? I understand not wanting to give away your treasure. Because this is a really neat mushroom. It's a bright, beautiful yellow.
From the top, it kind of looks like melted cheese.
Alan Rockefeller is a Bay Area mycologist.
And then you flip it over, and instead of having these thin gills like most mushroom has, they have relatively wide gills, kind of like ridges.
The mushroom lives mainly in California, is the largest type of chanterelle, and lives in a symbiotic relationship with live oak trees. To become official, this mushroom, which had been selected by mushroom enthusiasts in a public poll, needed to find a champion within the state legislature. And it found one in Assemblymember Ash Kalra, representing San Jose.
California has a storied tradition of state symbols, and they not only celebrate key aspects of the state,
but he says they teach us about its history, culture, and ecosystem.
And I thought fungi would be an ideal candidate for this honor as they play key roles in all three.
Kalra has also helped get funding to document all of the fungi in the state. In my quest to go foraging, I connected with some of the folks doing this work.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Tay Bright and Sadie Hickey are mycologists with the Fungal Diversity Survey, or FUNDIS. They're sampling what lives where in California.
I think we're going to find some mushrooms.
Yeah. There'll be mushrooms. Last time I was here, I found incredible mushrooms.
We were in Annadel State Park, east of Santa Rosa. Just from spending a little time with Bright and Hickey, it seems they're making discoveries left and right. Hickey recently found some golden chanterelles in the area, but they were under the wrong type of tree.
Under a deciduous oak tree instead of a live oak tree, which is very unusual, pretty much unheard of. So that was really exciting, and they were delicious. But they also became part of our project. I wasn't just collecting for me.
They sent a sample off for genetic sequencing to see if it's different from normal golden chanterelles. Soon, Bright and Hickey stopped by a bank to admire a fern with pretty golden-colored spores.
I really want to find fungi on goldback fern.
Me too. I don't even know if that exists.
I don't know if it exists either, but it probably does.
And then, guess what happens? Hickey finds some.
Yeah, I did. Look at that.
Oh my gosh. Right as you say, it doesn't exist.
With a magnifying glass, they could see what looked like tiny little white cups.
Oh my god.
Wow, I love that so much.
They'll send off a sample to see if they've discovered a new species exclusive to goldback fern. So that was exciting. But there were no golden chanterelles around.
What do you think are our chances of finding some?
Not the highest here.
Yeah, I don't.
No need for me to
continue to
tag along.
I wish we had brought you to the good habitat.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Ah, well, that's okay. But I was getting desperate. I decided to strike out on my own. So early one morning, I headed to Salt Point State Park, which is along Highway 1 and the ocean in northern Sonoma County. It's known for mushrooms, if not necessarily for chanterelles, but I had heard some folks had found them there before. I brought my husband. We tried to time the trip for a break in the rain and totally failed.
It's full on raining.
After a big storm, downed trees were everywhere. We climbed over two blocking the trail, but the third one stopped us.
Right. That
might be the end of the road.
I think that is absolutely the end of the road. Let's at least like look around here.
We couldn't find any oak trees to search under, but we did have some luck looking under some conifers.
Oh yeah, look at that. There we go. That's a chanterelle, for sure.
Nah, not really, we eventually agreed. I hung my head, came home, and called my chef friend, Miriam Donaldson.
Hey, how's it going?
Did you guys find mushrooms?
So I was kind of failing this assignment, I explained. Was there any way she could get some?
Girl, I will pull my chefly duties. I will make some phone calls. I will see if I can find you a hookup.
Her mushroom guy who used to supply her restaurant didn't want to take me foraging, but he was happy to give me some. 2 days later, we met him at a diner in town.
Last aisle on the left.
And her guy hands over a pound of our official state mushroom. It didn't feel like a drug deal, but it didn't not feel like one. I asked Miriam to show me how to cook them. So we got our families together and had a demonstration.
All right, so I've got some clean mushrooms here.
Just wash them with water.
Because they're on the ground, and the ground can be disgusting.
And then heat up your pan.
My cast iron pan is nice and hot.
First, in go the mushrooms.
There's nothing else in this pan. You want to make sure that you're cooking the mushrooms pretty hard. So I'm going to start by kind of dehydrating them in the butter to make sure I get all that moisture out.
Common mistake, she says, is cooking too low and slow and not adding enough butter. For example, she added about 1/4 pound of butter for 1 pound of mushrooms. And then add flavor.
Too much garlic, too much herbs, too much butter, just a little bit of salt, too much white wine, the fancy stuff, of course.
It was barefoot.
And some homemade sourdough bread. Tuck in.
And then we sat down to eat them with mashed potatoes and pork chops. And I'll tell you, they were divine. Creamy, meaty, fragrant, foresty. Mm.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Really. Thank you.
Thank you, Mom.
And here's my lead for looking on your own. I got clued in after all the above adventures. Try places where they've been spotted on the citizen science platform iNaturalist. But I didn't tell you that.
That intrepid mushroom hunter was KQED's science reporter, Danielle Venton. And now we're going to head to Fresno County, where a group of farm workers living in a mobile home park did something that might seem impossible at a time when housing costs here in California are just so high. They bought the park from their corporate landlords. It was a huge win for their community. The California Report's Marie Bolaños tells us how they did it. It's a cold, cloudy day in Fresno County, but that doesn't stop these mobile home park residents from celebrating this historic win. Nearly all of the 60 families that live in the park are from the same village, San Miguel Cuevas, in Oaxaca, Mexico. They are gathered under tarps, bundled up in their warmest clothes, eating tacos and enjoying the Chilean mixtec music from their hometown. Among those under the tarp is Marcelino Santos. He's a member of the new board of directors for the mobile home park. He says when they started this journey of purchasing the park, he had little confidence they'd be successful.
Sí, porque nosotros, la verdad, no estamos como, no tenemos un estudio para documentos y cosas así, no. Realmente nada más, nosotros sabemos trabajo de la agricultura.
He says they didn't understand the kind of paperwork that was involved in this process. They were just farm workers. That's the work they knew how to do. It's the work he and others at the park had dedicated their lives to. Santos was 14 years old when he moved from Oaxaca, Mexico to Fresno County with his older brother, his sister-in-law, and their 2 kids. He says he skipped school and started working right away in the fields, picking grapes. They shared a small house in Kerman, a rural town 30 minutes west of the mobile home park. Santos knew about the park because his aunt, uncle, and their kids lived there. At the time, he says the residents were mostly white.
De hecho, queríamos entrar porque queríamos conocer allá adentro, pero no podíamos entrar porque eran la mayoría eran americanos y no podían entrar desconocidos.
6 years later, Santos's brother saved up enough money working in the fields to purchase a 2-bedroom trailer at the park.
Mi hermano, el más grande, compró una trailer aquí Y así fuimos comprando poco a poco todos.
After that, he says other families from San Miguel Cuevas started to move to the park. Santos continued to share a trailer with his brother and his family to make rent even cheaper for them. When he married his wife, she moved into the trailer with them. And they even had their first and only son while living there. And then...
Nada más que se nos dio la oportunidad de esta traila con mi esposa y dijo, ¿sabes qué? Pues vamos a agarrarla, vamos a comprarla, pero no teníamos dinero.
Santos explains he and his wife had the opportunity to purchase a trailer in the park, but they didn't have enough money. They needed $11,000, and they only had $1,000.
Estuvimos juntando el dinero con familiares, con tíos, primos, de 500, de 1,000. Y sí, completamos el dinero.
So he says they borrowed from family members, and Santos got a second job packing table grapes to buy their trailer home.
Nos dábamos de voluntarios para trabajar horas extras para poder pagar el dinero.
When the day came that the trailer was finally theirs, Santos made it his home. He built a fence around the lot so that his son, who was 6 when they moved in, wouldn't run out into the street. He built a shed to keep his tools for work and gardening. The front yard is decorated with plants, and his neighbors were family.
La mayoría nos conocemos. Yo conozco muchas familias aquí que venimos desde nuestro pueblo, desde chiquitos. Somos primos y nos conocemos desde chiquitos.
He says he's known most of the park residents since they were kids living in Oaxaca. Life at the park was good. And then he says the situation seemed to change overnight. Even though Santos owned his trailer, he didn't own the land it was parked on. In 2019, a Stockton-based corporation named Harmony Communities California purchased the park. Several residents say the new landlord started enforcing different rules and issuing eviction notices. Santos says the rules seemed nonsensical.
Tenemos una herramienta que usamos en el trabajo, ¿verdad? Como son tijeras, palas. Y esas herramientas no las podíamos tener como... recargadas aquí ni aquí en ningún lugar las quería mirar.
He says the new property manager didn't want the tools they used for work to be seen from the front porch.
Si las miraban, tomaban fotos y ya las mandaban con el dueño y el dueño ya nos mandaba una carta como diciendo que teníamos que arreglar el que estábamos como violando el reglamento de él.
He says the new property manager would take photos and send them to the landlord and then they'd receive a violation notice in the mail. And he began to worry his family would get kicked out and become homeless.
No teníamos idea dónde íbamos a ir. Ese era el temor y era el estrés de que pensar, si me llegan a correr, ¿a dónde voy a ir?
After the new rules came a big rent increase, more than 30%. The community is made up of mostly farm workers. They'd chosen the park because of the low rent. Santos says he and his wife considered getting a second job to pay the rent. Instead, the residents decided to fight back. They formed the Grupo Comunitario de San Miguel Cuevas and got legal aid. They sued Harmony over alleged poor management of the park and retaliation against residents. Harmony declined an interview and did not respond to questions about the allegations. As the lawsuit moved forward, something unexpected happened. The California Center for Cooperative Development, which helps residents form housing cooperatives, got in touch.
And began having conversations about the potential of this park becoming a resident-owned community.
That's Mariah Thompson, the resident's attorney.
To sort of take those mobile home parks off the free market, off the private investment market, and so they can remain resident-managed and affordable.
Under that model, the residents would each have part ownership of the park. They'd be able to make decisions about how much rent to charge, park finances, and other operating rules. Thompson says residents were hesitant at first. The task seemed too daunting for many of the residents who left school as children to work in the fields. But after months of deliberation and organizing, they were ready to take on the challenge.
Hola, soy Keila y estoy aquí con Suhey. Somos su equipo de justicia del lenguaje hoy. Hi, I am Kayla, and I am here with...
It took a ton of coordination on the part of residents to get 52 families to attend the Zoom meetings, not to mention the multiple nonprofits. Then there was the matter of language, English, Spanish, and Mixteco.
It was like some of these meetings looked like the UN. I mean, it was pretty incredible having all these different interpreter, boxes.
They also had to get the funding, more than $7 million to purchase the park. That required yet another organization to help them with state loans. Eventually, the corporation agreed to sell the park to residents if they dropped the lawsuit. The entire process took 5 years, three nonprofits, and the unflappable will of residents. They finally closed the deal in February. But the road doesn't end there. The residents are now tasked with the responsibility of running and operating the park. In order to form the co-op, the residents had to establish a board of directors. Santos is one of five members representing the 60 families at the park. In the first month, the board was able to stabilize rents to $520, about $400 less than what they were paying under their previous landlord. But Santos says there are still a lot of things they don't know how to do.
Siempre estamos preguntando lo que podemos hacer, lo que no. Es nuevo para nosotros todo esto.
That's where CCCD comes in. The nonprofit will help the board run the park for the next 10 years. At today's meeting, they're going over the best way to communicate with their newly hired property manager. Whether they want to give her a budget for emergency repairs or have her request the money each time she needs it. Santos says these are the less exciting details of being a board member. What he's really looking forward to is turning the barn that sits on the mobile home park lot into a hall where they can throw quinceañeras, baptisms, and weddings. Despite the hurdles along the way, Santos says he learned a big lesson throughout this experience.
Y eso siempre lo voy a tener en mente, es de que si se quiere llegar a algo, tienes que trabajar. En equipo, siempre en equipo con tus compañeros y hay un logro. Hay un logro y yo sé que si tú trabajas muy duro, vas a tener resultados positivos.
If you want to accomplish something big, you have to do it as a team, he says. And if you work hard together, the results will be positive. At the start, this was a dream they had little faith they could achieve.
Van a haber reglas, pero... Ya no estamos con ese temor de que nos van a correr de aquí y a dónde nos vamos a ir a vivir. Es más, ahorita estamos más como más tranquilos, como que menos estrés ahora.
Now, he says, the park will still have rules, but everyone can have some peace knowing they won't be forced out of their homes.
The California Report's Madi Bolaños brought us that story from Fresno County. That's it for the California Report magazine for this week. We're a production of KQED in San Francisco. Our senior editor is Victoria Mauleon, with editing help this week from Pauline Bartoloni and Kevin Stark. Susie Racho is our director-producer. Our engineer is Brendan Willard. Lucen Mendel is our intern. And I'm Sasha Coca. You can catch all of our California stories on our podcast, The California Report Magazine. Your state, your stories.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Hi, KQED listeners. I'm poet and author Xinyi Pai. On the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network, I explore modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about their owner. Our newest season brings you stories of trailblazing Asian American women and surprising objects they hold on to. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.